My name is Chris Kerr, Executive Director at the Ignatian Solidarity Network, and I'm joined today by Jesuit Father Richard Raskavage, a professor of sociology and anthropology and the director of the Center for Faith and Public Life at Fairfield University. Father Raskavage has also served as the National Director of Jesuit Refugee Service USA and of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops Office on Migration and Refugee Service. Father Raskavage is a member of the federal government's Interagency Task Force on Unaccompanied Children, which includes members of the U.S. State Department, DHS, Justice, HHS, and others. Father Raskavage is joining us from his office at Fairfield University in Fairfield, Connecticut. Welcome, Father Raskavage.
I'm happy to talk to you. That's great.
What I hope we could do is this. First, I'd like to hear a bit about how you came to be part of the federal government's Interagency Task Force on Unaccompanied Children. Then I thought you could possibly share a little bit about how we've gotten to this urgent humanitarian crisis as defined by President Obama, with 60,000 plus unaccompanied minors here in the U.S. this year and 130,000 estimated for next year. It would be interesting to hear a little bit about how you see this situation comparing to other humanitarian crises you've seen in your work with JRS and the Bishops Conference. And finally, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts about how you see all of this impacting the immigration reform debate. Does that sound all right?
Okay. Well, that's good. I've been on this task force. It's really not a new appointment. I've been on it. It was in, you know, it's been more informal group of State Department, Justice Department, HHS, and Office of Refugee Resettlement, and then a few of us that are in the non-governmental world. As we were all noting, the rise in the number over last year. I started getting very concerned about it because I could see every month there was more and more coming in. The guideline from the White House was basically that we don't want to go public about this, you know, let's try to deal with it in, you know, as privately as we can, because it'll derail the immigration reform process and discussions. That'll be the end of it. Of course, now it is public, and now it has derailed completely the immigration thing. You know, it was kind of not a wise move by the White House, because they should have been putting in place the structures and the response stuff ahead of time instead of waiting till now, to this month, to, you know, sort of start a whole process for dealing with the children. They still don't have a real plan. I mean, it's just let's deal with the immediate need problem, and you know, we'll see what happens as it goes along. And I don't think it's a really good approach, because there's already a lot of chaos in the system. The research proposal that we're looking into and trying to develop is actually looking at these things of both interviewing the children who are in the country, as well as talking about their conditions, where they are, how they're being handled, what they're missing. You know, I think there's a lot of issues that are not being addressed for the children, and I think the process is going to actually bring the kind of policy changes or whatever that I think they need to look at, because many of them, at least on the surface, qualify for asylum.
Right.
Or at least have good grounds on which you could base an asylum case, but they can't do it by themselves. You have to have a lawyer representing them to bring the case. And even if they do submit an asylum application before a judge or whatever, there's a waiting list of almost 3 years before they can actually adjudicate the case. So the question is, what happens to these kids? Even if they do get an asylum application, you know, what are they going to do for 3 years in the United States if they don't have any status and they're just sort of, you know, hanging around or whatever is right. going to happen to them? And that becomes a big issue, I think, as we move forward. There needs to be a lot of in-depth talking to the children to find out really what's going on in their lives, what's happening in their family, why are they here, and all these sort of questions. Everything is focused on the mechanics of, you know, getting them housing, getting them out of the detention center, and moving them in under the custody of HHS and all this sort of stuff. But the actual kids are sort of almost being ignored. You know, they're just herded into these processes and now into these out of the detention centers, which are horrible, into the temporary housing or whatever they're calling it, in different parts of the country. Presumably, if it works out, they want to reunite them with their family who are in the United States, or at least get them as foster care or something like that. But all of that is very complicated, and I don't know how they're actually They seem to be playing it all by ear, so I'm a little concerned about the whole process. As far as other countries and how they deal with children, I mean, there is a protocol, you know, of dealing with unaccompanied children. I mean, it's in the United Nations High Commissioner of Refugees, you know, has guidelines for how countries should deal with that question. I'm not sure. My own sense from the task force is that nobody in the government, including State Department, knows about these things. I mean, they don't seem to have any knowledge that these things exist. So I don't know if they're applying them or not, because they don't seem to know themselves that these guidelines are existent. But other countries have followed them, and I think it makes some sense to have some structure around the children that you know, takes care of their needs, but also, you know, finds out what are their really. Can they return? Can they be deported? Even if you want to deport them, you know, should they be deported? These kind of things that have to be answered by governments, and I don't find here in the State Department that they're actually paying any attention to that. And for me, the root cause of all this whole thing has two things. One is the violence that's occurring in Central America. Our Jesuit brothers have, you know, documented a lot of this. And,
sure.
And we know that, you know, this is a, you know, big issue and something that has to be addressed probably multinationally. I mean, we have to get Canada, you know, Mexico, Panama, whatever, Colombia even, to help coordinate some kind of an approach to the violence. You know, because the governments are very weak
right.
in Central America, and their capacity for really addressing this is quite limited. And I think we really have to, if we're serious about, you know, not having kids migrating, then we have to address that root cause, I think. And also, there's a question of education needs to be done down there, including by the church itself, because the UNHCR interviewed about 400 kids in Mexico as they were moving toward the United States. And about, you know, 60%, I think, said they're escaping gang violence. But about 40% said they're escaping domestic violence. They're running away from being beaten up or raped in their family. And I think this is where the Catholic Church needs to step in and start educating more strongly, you know, the sinfulness of domestic abuse and the fact that abusing a child in any way is a morally wrong thing to do. I think that needs to be loud and clear, because the number of kids that are talking about their own family abuse is really, I think, a serious problem. And there's a problem, of course, with the DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which the administration put forth last year, The word has definitely gotten out down there, but it's being totally misinterpreted that if they're young, if they're underage, and they come to the United States, they qualify for DACA, which they do not under any circumstances qualify for DACA.
Right.
And so they were not being told that down there. I mean, I just heard today that there is some Honduran public announcements on...
Service announcements.
Yeah, service announcements about it, and that's a good sign, because I think there's a definite lack of education about this, the whole legal system in the United States, and what is possible and what is impossible. And it's a dangerous trip, as we know, and so that too needs to be told to particularly families where the parents are sending the kid alone out and paying for the coyote to take him up to the border. These are dangerous routes, and especially for girls, I think, even more than boys. But
Absolutely.
Boys too get beaten up, and it's a tough road. And so I would say, you know, if I had to make policy recommendations, it would to address the root cause of violence, and then also to deal with this education issue of, so people know what's possible, what isn't possible, and under the legal system in the United States, it is possible to apply for asylum. You can do that right at the border, but
right. There's
a credible fear screening that goes on with the kids as they enter Texas or wherever, where they either pass them or fail them based on some simple questions they ask them about the basis of their fear if they apply for asylum. But even if they don't, if a kid says, I'm come here to, you know, unite with my father, or I come here to make make more money so I can help my family or a better life. Those are automatically excluded from the asylum process. And of course, the kids don't know that, you know, but that's what's happening. And I think, there's really some need here for education in a big way with the children, particularly because they don't necessarily even understand what immigration law is all about or what it's I think we haven't done enough in that area.
And unfortunate in the fact that we now have even more young people in the country than we did a year ago. I mean, if you think about these numbers, 60,000 this year, an estimated 130,000.
Yeah, it's unsustainable in a lot of ways. I mean, the government doesn't. I mean, they don't have enough beds. They can't even figure out. There's some really basic issues here that they're desperate for housing. They don't know where to turn. I was on a conference call yesterday with the grassroots people in the government, and they're talking. These are like little sort of social service agencies, faith-based in large part, what they can do, the little faith-based social service groups can do some things, but very minimum, you know. I mean, there's in small amounts of children, they can't take huge numbers, you know.
Sure.
Catholic Charities, because it's so big, might have, be able to handle a bigger number, but even there, they're overwhelmed. They can't deal with this kind of thing. So I'm not sure what the government's going to do about this, because they clearly are running up short on all kinds of things, and they're supposed to, the Justice Department is supposed to, well, it has put out an announcement for an AmeriCorps program for lawyers, so that they put $100 million into it for lawyers to represent the children, but I'm hearing that, not too many lawyers are coming forth to do it, so I don't know what that's another sort of problem they're facing now, is are they going to get enough lawyers to represent the children? And that, so it just keeps, more and more, and the more the kids come in, the more it becomes even more unsustainable. So sure. I'm not sure what their policy approach is going to be about all this. It's kind of a bit of a mystery to me, even though I'm in conversation with a lot of these people that are running the approach. I don't see, there's certainly not a lot of long-term vision or sense of what the best outcome here is and how to achieve it, and that really needs to be discussed, and we're thinking as part of our research that we might call together the NGOs and how we identify the problem and what we think some of the policy answers are going to be or should be, because I'm not hearing this from the leadership in the different agencies and government. And I think we have to sort of push them to address some of these things from the non-governmental community. And that's really why I'm sticking with keeping on top of the task force and
sure.
or what they call the coalition now, the coordination coalition of governmental agencies, to see how they're moving forth.
Sure. And Rick, just maybe to close, I mean, you've worked through your work at JRS and at the Bishops Conference, you've seen I'm sure many situations of people migrating, of people being refugees, like these children that are a growing population in the U.S. How would you compare this? President Obama called it an urgent humanitarian crisis a few weeks ago. In comparison to other things you've seen around the world, how does this compare?
Well, I mean, if you're talking 60,000 people, I mean, In the refugee world, I mean, that's a small amount of people.
Sure.
It should be able to be handled, because it shouldn't technically be an overwhelming problem for a sovereign state like the United States to handle that number. But in fact, it is proving to be a problem. So it's more than a humanitarian crisis. It's a crisis of not having the governmental structures that can actually handle these kids. And so I would say it's beyond a humanitarian crisis. I mean, there's actual physical and also political kind of issues around it that, are not being really well addressed. And I mean, it's okay to say, oh, these poor kids, and we have to help these poor kids. But, there's a real anger, I think, at least I'm finding in a lot of people in the country about the whole border and why are these kids here? And I mean, how did they get in here? You know, that's the question I hear asked when I'm talking to, like, local groups or town hall stuff. And what's the reason for this from the U.S. point of view? You know, there's all kinds of mistaken answers to that. But I think it is a serious issue that needs to be addressed in terms of policy. And when I look at other countries, you know, if you look at Syria today, you know, the Syrians have fled in millions and this and that, and a lot of children are involved in these things. And most refugee programs try to sort out the children from the others, you know, because they have special needs. I mean, they have whole issues. I mean, that's where JRS got involved in a lot of ways, is that we were hearing from the refugees themselves that through our methodology of accompaniment, that the parents were really worried about the education of their children, who were not in school and not learning and falling behind, and that they needed some way of giving educational services to the children. And that's where we began developing refugee curricula, and now we have even a higher education accreditation program,
right,
and stuff like that. And we've become kind of the go-to place in the United Nations for refugee education sort of things now after so many years. So there has to be, I think, in the United States, and this is where JRS might think about some way of approaching this problem here with the kids because they have undocumented kids have a right to free public education, K-12. The Supreme Court ruled that. So it's not that they can't go to public school. They should go to public school in a way, because they have the right to go to public school, and it's been very clearly defined. So whether they'll be accepted, whether they'll be dealt with properly at these local public schools, if they get settled with somebody or foster care or whatever, I don't know. That's a lot of children to talk about. But I think maybe JRS could be helpful in, even as consultants to the public schools, about how to handle a particular children refugee situation and what sort of services that could be specifically provided. I mean, you can't dump a kid who doesn't speak any English into a elementary school,
right,
and then expect them to, you know, to do any. I mean, they do learn English pretty quickly. I mean, we know that, but still, they need special services, and that's going to have to be provided by somebody or somehow. And I think the public school that I've talked to, like locally here, and I mean, they're very worried about it, because they do have ESL programs, which are good, and that might be where the kids first start out, as in an ESL class or something.
Right.
These are just part of the complicated responses that need to be made to the children over, not just immediately, but over the next several years, I think. And then we just don't know if they're going to keep coming. And as I say, if you don't address the root causes, it's hopeless to kind of sustain this kind of an inflow year after year after year, you know. And we're pretty sure it's not going to stop
right
soon, you know. So we have to be prepared for this large number coming in, and try to have the structures that we can deal with them.
Sure. It's unfortunate that in the current comprehensive immigration reform debate, addressing root causes has not played a prominent role. I mean, if you look at the Senate bill, it doesn't seem that in the mindset of comprehensive immigration reform that root causes of issues in economic or security issues in Central America are a part of that.
I would agree 100% with that, and I think it needs to be part of it. I mean, I just don't see how, we can talk about border security or any of these things without looking at where is it coming from and why is it coming from, and, you know, is there something else we could do in Central America, in Mexico, or wherever, that would help alleviate some of these social economic concerns. And you're right, they don't talk about it. I mean, it's just not part. I mean, it's not unusual, because that's usually the refugee problem is usually separated from the political problems and the various other issues in countries. So, you know, nobody talks about stopping the refugees in Syria except through ending the war, you know. And
right.
It, but they're not totally connected, you know. It's not, you know, they really, when you're talking about a refugee problem at the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, for example, the root causes are not often actually talked about in any real way. And so the, similarly in the nation states, it's a similar way with the when a refugee problem arises. And now every place in the world, I was at the high-level dialogue on migration and from the Nunzio's office at UN, and every single country got up to the podium and talked about their migration problems. Everybody has a problem with migration. I mean, it's just, it got kind of annoying after a while. I think the Holy See was the only one that saw migration having a potential, being a potential gift to the societies and the countries. You know,
sure.
Everybody else talked about all the negativity surrounding the migration, and I think that's how it's perceived in general. And even in a serious refugee crisis, governments still, although they may open their doors, are they primarily see it as a political social challenge, you know, and not sort of a sovereign responsibility to help these people who can't be sent back to their home countries, and that's always an educational task, you know. Even within the State Department, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, Migration and Population Office, they have very little power in the broader State Department policy bureaucracy, you know. And so these questions don't, even when they're handing out money to resettle refugees in the United States, they don't really talk about root causes or what the bigger policy of the United States should be in the countries that are we're taking the refugees in from. And that's a serious flaw, I think, in the overall structure, the way we deal with these kind of cases that are coming into the country.
Sure. Excellent. Well, Rick, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to kind of hearing what happens with the research you're working on and how it can be applicable and helpful to responding to, you know, what is a great humanitarian crisis here on the U.S.-Mexico border.